Israeli forces killed two young Palestinians in the occupied West Bank as the regime continues its bloody repression. Lebanon's Hezbollah chief has called for stronger response by Islamic countries to repeated cases of the Quran desecration in Denmark and Sweden. And Ukraine says Russia is getting used to full-fledged war following fresh drone attacks on Moscow and Russian vessels in the Black Sea. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Now we'll start this news bulletin with Israel's deadly violence against Palestinians. The regime troops have fatally shot a teenager in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Health Ministry identified the victim as Mohammed Farid Shawki al-Zarir. Ministry said the 15-year-old boy was killed south of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Israeli army claims slain Palestinian wanted to carry out a stabbing attack. And earlier Tuesday, Israeli force shot dead a 20-year-old near a settlement east of Al-Quds. Now the victim had wounded six Israelis in a shooting operation. The resistance movement Hamas hailed the incident as a natural response to the regime's rising crimes across occupied territories. Israel's killed well over 210 Palestinians since the start of 2023. And earlier we spoke to our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candiel, about Israel's latest episode of bloody violence in the occupied West Bank.
There are clear orders for the Israeli military to use their weapons to shoot and kill Palestinians. And the reason and the claims are ready, the justifications are ready, that anytime they feel suspicious about anyone, they use their weapons, shoot and kill any Palestinian, knowing at the end of the day that none of the Israeli soldiers would be held accountable for a crime. This time, 15-year-old, as you have mentioned, 212 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of this year. 40 of them are under the age of 18, so 40 Palestinian children, because according to laws and international laws, anyone less than 18 years old are teenager or minors, children. So yet another Palestinian children has been killed. This rises the number of the Palestinian martyrs to 212.
The Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, has strongly condemned repeated cases of Quran desecration in Sweden and Denmark. In a televised address, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah described the sacrilegious acts as intolerable and aggression against Islam. He lashed out at Sweden and said a spy for Israel's Mossad has offended over 2 billion Muslims under protection of Swedish police. Nasrallah warned that desecrators will regret the action. He stressed that Muslims must bear responsibility in regards to their sanctities. Nasrallah argued that faltering stances of Islamic countries toward desecration confirms the fact that only resistance can defend Lebanon, Palestine, and Al-Aqsa Mosque. He also called for an immediate halt to hostilities against Palestinians. Head of Egypt's Salazar Islamic Youth Center has once again called on Muslim nations to boycott Swedish and Danish products following Quran desecrations. Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb was responding to a letter from Ayatollah Ali Reza Arafi, the director of Iran's Islamic seminaries, against the sacrilegious acts in Europe. Sheikh Tayeb said Muslims around the world should unite against challenges targeting their sanctities. In a letter to Al-Azhar's chief, Iran's Ayatollah Arafi urged Muslim countries to take coordinated and decisive measures against Sweden and other states that allow desecration of Islamic sanctities. In the past month, the Holy Quran was repeatedly desecrated in Sweden and Denmark, all under government authorization. Incidents have led to outrage and condemnations worldwide. An Iraqi woman who went viral on social media attempting to save a Quran from desecration in Denmark has been identified. Quds al-Samari says she suffered injuries during confrontation with two far-right elements and was later arrested on charges of theft. Robert Carter tracked her down and spoke to her.
the Arab woman who took on two far-right activists in a bid to save a Quran from desecration in Denmark has been identified. Iraqi-Danish citizen Quds al-Samarai risked her own life while en route to visit a friend on Monday, the 24th of July. The footage of the incident, which occurred outside Iraq's embassy, went viral on social media. The video clearly shows Quds grabbing the Quran before being wrestled to the ground by the two men. In one instance, one of the desecrators can be seen with his hands reaching for her neck. Police later arrested Quds on accusations she was stealing the Quran from the activists. Speaking to Press TV, Quds explained how the incident left her with minor injuries but no regrets.
Here the police dragged me and the man was shouting that I stole his property. I think he was scared because he knew hitting me was wrong, so he had to justify it by saying I stole. As soon as the police heard the word stealing, they immediately put me in handcuffs and gave him back the Quran. The police asked me what happened. I said I saw our Quran being burned, and I just wanted to put it out. And then I saw another Quran with shoes on it, and I wanted to take the shoe off. But I didn't realize that the shoe was nailed on the Quran. I told the police they hit me and strangled me, but they replied with, it's their freedom of speech. So I replied, okay. So it's also my freedom of speech to protect the Quran. I thought the police came to help me, but they turned out to twist the story by saying I was trying to steal.
Quds now faces a day in court, while her injuries have left her struggling to walk. Meanwhile, Muslims across the world remain in a state of anger as calls for serious action and retaliation to Europe's defense of far-right hate speech continues.
Despite Copenhagen officially condemning the incident which occurred just where we stand outside Iraq's embassy a few days ago, that doesn't mean that they've outlawed the practice. And according to reports, several other similar incidents have already occurred since, with far-right activists again targeting the diplomatic buildings of Muslim-majority nations here in the Danish capital. However, this has come at a price. Denmark's defense of the so-called free speech of far-right activists to attack Islam's holy sanctities has led to both Denmark and Sweden's reputation to plummet across the Muslim world. Questions should surely be asked now whether it is indeed within the diplomatic interests of European countries to defend such a fringe extremist practice when, of course, there is so much at stake with economic backlashes from the Muslim world. Robert Carter, Copenhagen.
Following a drone attack on a commercial tower in central Moscow, a Ukrainian official now speaking of more attacks on Russian soil. Ukrainian presidential advisor tweeted that Moscow is rapidly getting used to full-fledged war, saying the conflict is finally moving to the territory of the authors of the war. Russian air defenses have shot down several drones over Moscow, with one hitting a tower that was already struck Sunday. Russia says it thwarted attacks by Ukrainian sea drones as well on its naval and civilian fleet in the Black Sea. Ukraine has recently carried out several drone strikes on Russian targets. Moscow has called them acts of desperation. Ukraine began a long-awaited counteroffensive in June, but has made modest advances in the face of resistance from the Russians. And earlier, for more on the story, we spoke to our Moscow correspondent, Johnny Miller.
Well, yes, this is the second such attack in 3 days, so it's certainly very concerning for the Russian authorities. As you say, hits a skyscraper in a business district. Again, it seems like Ukraine may well be targeting that area. Reports on some Russian channels that a Russian government agency may have been located nearby as well. But it looks like Ukraine is targeting that area. Once again, no casualties, very minor damage. It's mainly a kind of psychological operation, if you like, to try and sow panic or cause internal trouble within Russia, but certainly very alarming for the authorities. If these attacks continue, we may well see casualties at some stage, but we'll wait and see whether this is Ukraine is able to sustain these attacks or whether they are just a couple in the last few days. The only way for victory for Ukraine, or any kind of victory, is for Russian internal troubles. NATO countries were getting very excited about Wagner's recent escapades, their march to Moscow. And I think that Ukraine's strategy is to try to create internal trouble for the Kremlin, hence why you have these attacks. Ukraine doesn't have the capability to march on Moscow or anything like that, but it does clearly have the capability to strike Russian territory. So I think that's what you're seeing. Moscow says it's desperation.
And now welcome everyone to News Review Program. A new survey reveals Americans' confidence in their military has reached its lowest point in over 25 years. According to the Gallup poll, only 60% of Americans express, quote-unquote, a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the military. The confidence level has been declining since 2021, coinciding with the chaotic and bloody U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. As the pullout was taking place, the Afghan government collapsed. The Taliban took over, an exodus followed, and over 180 people, including 13 American military personnel, were killed in a bombing. The U.S. invaded Afghanistan in October of 2001, following the September 11th attacks. The invasion led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Afghans. Joining us now for the program is Mr. Frank Emspach, radio producer and political commentator from Madison, Wisconsin, and Mr. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer, joining us out of San Francisco, California. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess we'll start there in Madison with you, Mr. Frank Emspach. I know we went pretty heavy on the whole Afghan thing with respect to the second part of the story, but we both very well know, the three of us, that this is really about confidence level in the U.S. military, which has declined dramatically in the last 20 years. Your initial thoughts, will you attribute to that reduction?
There are two things that I think contribute to it. First, in the last 8 or 10 years, the most conservative wing of the Republican Party has consistently attacked all of the American institutions, including the Army, the Congress, and so forth, and that has an effect. Of course it has an effect, particularly when you look at the situation now where the person who's been doing the attacking, Donald Trump, is leading in the Republican primary. So there's a base of distrust that's been encouraged now for almost a decade. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the wars that we have been involved in Vietnam and in Iraq and Afghanistan, don't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, because they see us, you know, this massive military, you know, bombing peasants, and not a serious adversary like in World War II. And the third thing now is that there are opportunities outside of the Army for people. And I think that the combination results in a lowering of confidence, and as the Army reported earlier this week, or last week, a real problem, all the services, a real problem with recruitment.
Thank you, Mr. Emspach. And Scott, I saw you shaking your head there for a second. Welcome to the program. Your initial thoughts on the story, and will you attribute this increasing skepticism to in the U.S. military by American citizens, Scott?
Well, I served as an officer in the United States Army, and I have been a Republican conservative all my life, and I tell you exactly why people are dropping in their confidence in the military, and that is simply because the military is being demoralized. It has no moral character anymore. It is not the strongest and the best and the brightest and the smartest men who are trained to fight and kill the enemy and fight wars. It's now turned into a rainbow flag drag queen show with transgender schizophrenic lunatics running around serving as the pirates and the service profiteers over the deep state and the empire's theft of resources from Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Africa, Ukraine. The military is not the machinery of the army and such. It is the men, and the moral degeneration and sickness and toxicity with which the Democrats and the leftists and the atheists and the deep state in general and others have poisoned the military with, have totally caused the American people to see a rot, a sickness, a leprosy spreading in the United States military. And I'll tell you this, it's only going to get worse. You're going to pretty soon see an absolute collapse and a alienation against the military if it turns into this social club, social ladder, where the Democrats and the leftists start experimenting with dressing men up as women and women as men, and intermixing the sexes, which is part of the hell on earth the Democrats and the leftists try and pursue. And the military is just a social factory. Plus, the Democrats and the leftists and others have forced the military to get a COVID-19 shot, which now scientists and doctors have said has caused nothing but detrimental health effects, myocarditis, neurological diseases, pilots being unable to fly. And I'll put it this way, the military leadership are pursuing this racist agenda where the black chief of staff of the United States Air Force and Lloyd Austin, the black chief of staff of the United States military, are trying to position people into pilot slots and other slots based on their race. Well, my father was a Marine Corps aviator in Vietnam, and I can tell you this, a fighter pilot is one of the most highly tuned, intelligent, mathematical minds on planet Earth. And you cannot put people into pilot positions just because you like the color of their skin or you dislike the color of other people's skin. So I think we're going to see a drop in the confidence in the military because of the moral degradation. And no one feels that more than people like myself, who served our country, who have the moral character of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and are witnessing this absolute train wreck that the Biden administration is doing. And I'll put it this way, too. I came out of the military after discovering that 9/11 was a complete fraud, and I think many in the military have, too. And that's another reason that they are pulling back, because they are sick and tired of the military being used to overthrow countries and color revolutions and small wars and engage in very dangerous wars such as against Russia. The American people are tired of their military being used in a way that threatens our very existence. So I think you're only going to see the faith and confidence of the military increase, especially as the social experimentation and degradation of the Democrats and Biden increase.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Pleasure to have you both on. Mr. Frank M. Spector joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, and Scott Bennett joining us out of San Francisco, California. This brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime occupation authorities have recently forced a Palestinian owner to self-demolish his own house in occupied Al-Quds neighborhood of Beit Hanina, citing unpermitted construction as a pretext. Witnesses said that Ahmad Saud, the owner, demolished his own house after being pressed into doing so by all Israeli municipality. Saud had no choice but to do so in order to avoid paying exorbitant fees to the Israeli regime municipality in the event that its crews carried out the demolition on their own. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the Saud family, with the help of neighbors, demolished their own home in the Al-Quds neighborhood of Beit Hanina. But why? The Zionist regime occupation authorities forced the Palestinian family to self-demolish their own house in occupied Al-Quds neighborhood of Beit Hanina, citing unpermitted construction as a pretext. Witnesses told the official Palestinian news agency Wafa that Ahmad Saud, the owner, demolished his own house after being pressed into doing so by all Israeli municipality. Saud had no choice but to do so in order to avoid paying exorbitant fees to the Zionist regime municipality in the event that its crews carried out the demolition on their own. Either way, the house would have to be demolished. Palestinian families sometimes opt to self-demolish to avoid the high cost of having their own homes destroyed by the Zionist regime military. Under the pretext of building without a permit, which is almost never granted to Palestinians in the occupied city, The Zionist regime municipality has been demolishing or forcing Palestinians to demolish their homes in Al-Quds as part of a policy aimed to restrict Palestinian expansion in occupied Al-Quds. At the same time, the municipality and government facilitate the construction of tens of thousands of housing units in illegal settlements in East Al-Quds for Zionist settlers, with the goal of offsetting the demographic balance in favor of the Jewish settlers in the occupied city. Although Palestinians in East Al-Quds, a part of internationally recognized Palestinian territory that has been subject to Israeli regime military occupation since 1967, they are denied their citizenship rights and are instead classified only as residents whose permits can be revoked if they move away from the city for more than a few years. They are also discriminated against in all aspects of life, including housing, employment, and services, and are unable to access services in the West Bank due to the construction of the Zionist regime separation wall. According to Tasnim News Agency, the Zionist regime demolished 54 Palestinian-owned structures in East Al-Quds in the largest division of the occupied West Bank in July, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. It said a total of 66 Palestinians, including 34 children, were displaced as a result of the demolitions that took place between July 5th and 24th, and the livelihoods of more than 795 others were affected. The UN body said in its report that 16 of the affected structures were provided by donors, of which 15 were demolished in a single incident in Al-Muntar area of Al-Quds, while the sole remaining structure was destroyed in Beit Jala town. The report highlighted that 80% of the affected structures war in Area C of the West Bank, which constitutes about 61% of the territory and is under full Israeli regime military control. The other 11 structures were demolished in East Al-Quds, including 9 residential structures, resulting in the displacement of 5 households, comprising 24 people, including 12 children. 8 of the 11 structures demolished in that area were destroyed by their own owners to avoid payment of fines to the Zionist regime authorities. Additionally, the Zionist regime authorities demolished 2 agricultural-related structures in Birin district of the West Bank under the false pretext of trespassing a land owned by the Zionist regime. The OCHA report said Israeli regime forces, in addition to demolitions, evictions, and forcible displacement, shot and killed 10 Palestinians, among them children, between July 4th and 27th, during separate raids in Nablus, Qalqilia, and Ramallah. Furthermore, the UN body said 352 Palestinians, including at least 56 children, were injured by Israeli regime forces across the West Bank during the mentioned period. At least 26 of the miners were struck by live ammunition. The Zionist regime routinely demolishes Palestinian houses in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, claiming that the structures have been built without permits, which are almost impossible to obtain. They also sometimes order Palestinian owners to demolish their own houses or pay the cost of the demolition. The fabricated regime of Israel has already occupied thousands of donems of Palestinian agricultural lands to construct and expand new illegal settler units in various areas in the West Bank. More than 600,000 Israelis live in over 230 settlements built since 1967 Israeli regime occupation of the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and Al-Quds. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. The United Nations Security Council has condemned the Zionist regime's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Palestinians want the West Bank as part of a future independent state, with East Al-Quds as its capital.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, the host of this program. This is Viewpoints. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, and we want to discuss another important topic regarding the speeches and the addresses of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Brother Ali Alevian, and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Brother Ali Alevian, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaykum assalam. Thank you for having me here.
So today we want to talk about the important concept of adala, or justice, in the thoughts and the speeches of Ayatollah Khamenei. And we know that when founding the Islamic Revolution of Iran and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini's main slogan, one of the main slogans, was establishing justice in the society. First of all, Sayyid Mohsen, let's talk about justice in terms of the, as established by Imam, by the late Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah. What does he mean exactly by justice on that time?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we know that Imam Khomeini was an Islamic scholar, he meant justice as what has come in the Quran. Obviously, his main slogan was based on the Quranic teachings, and the revolution was an Islamic revolution. So therefore, when he is describing justice, or when he talks about justice, it is same as what obviously has come in the Quran and in the Islamic texts. In many places of the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, for example, اِعْدِلُوا وَرْإِقْسِطُ. The word قِسْط and عَدْل, these both wordings are being used like in the Quranic text. Some of the scholars, they have come, they came with the, and they said like it's different in meaning.
That's right.
When they're used together.
Okay.
For example, like qist is more referred towards a justice which is in monetary terms.
The transactions.
Transactional justice, or economical, we can say.
Yes.
And when it is i'dilu or adl, it is more social, or, you know, individual.
That's right.
Non-transactional.
Yes.
Aspect. So Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, when he came up with the revolution, and he did that revolution, the main, we can say, objective was to bring justice amongst the people, which is in the Quran. The justice which Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has brought in his time. Obviously, at that time, there were these issues as well.
That's right.
Now, when we go towards the definition of the justice, there are different definitions. The Supreme Leader also refers to two of those definitions. One is وَزْعُ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ بِمَوْضِعِ, means that putting everything in its place.
In its right, proper place.
In its right, proper place.
That's right.
There is another definition that you need to give haq to zi haq.
That's right.
The one who possesses the right, you need to give right to it.
Mm-hmm.
So these both definitions are used In the Islamic context, especially in the speeches of the Supreme Leader and Imam Khomeini, late Imam Khomeini.
Okay. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen. And let's, Brother Ali, get to you. Is your definition of justice and adala in the context of Islamic Republic of Iran the same as Sayyid Mohsen gave? Or you have a different definition, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Look, brother, justice and equality was the last, let's say, objective and goal in an Islamic terminology and, let's say, in an Islamic worldview. You see, even in the missions of the Ahlul Bayt and the Imams, or let's say the prophets earlier than them, they have all come to create a scene of justice for the people and to invite people to the justice, in case we see that even the last Imam, the last Savior, is coming to يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا. That's right. He's coming to increase justice in the scene of the earth. So this, Islamically speaking, this is the goal of all religions, Abrahamic and divine religions, to spread justice on the scene of the earth and come to and bring equality to the whole humankind. But as
so
for the definition,
justice and equality are the same, you mean?
If we translate them, musawat and adala, no, they are not the same. But in case we both actually define them as adala, yeah, they are the same.
Because you know that the foreigners and the non-Muslims are criticizing somehow some of the laws and Islamic rulings in Islam for not observing equality between
since
men
there
and
is
women.
No, as for the terms, we cannot find a clear-cut, let's say, equivalent in English for adala.
Okay.
So we are using both justice and equality to come to the same meaning.
But justice is a broader concept, isn't it?
Very true.
Okay.
And then as for the definition that you mentioned and pinpointed, the same definition that was saying that it's true. It's to actually make the rewards and punishments in the right order as they deserve it to be. For example, if something, this is one definition actually, or there are other definitions to put everything in its right place,
in its proper place,
to give anyone its or his or her right in the same way that he or she deserves. Mm-hmm. So these are the translations, or these are the definitions of the term by itself. But what is more important than the definition is implementation of adala. This is something that has been the controversial issue in the course of history among the different schools of thought and also religions. Okay. But in Islam, it's a key concept and it requires to be talked about and to dive into it to see what exactly we mean by adala and what are the functions of justice or adala. These are the concepts that we need to talk about them in depth.
The Rahbar, Imam Khamenei, has also mentioned that adala is something separate from musawat. You do not get this mistaken.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the musawat will equal oppression, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and adala, musawat are two different concepts. And another case is that sometimes, you know, the term in terms of the justice, we want to consider everyone equal, but the people all across the world have different talents and potentials.
Very true.
So if you're gonna give them their own proper right, it would be according to the potential and the right and the, you know, we can say the talent that they have and they show. If you're gonna consider all of them the same, then it would be sometimes zulm or oppression against some of them. Thank you.
Islam by itself is against this equality in the definition of these two terms.
Okay.
Let's say musawat and adala.
Uh-huh.
Look, sometimes, as you rightly mentioned, musawat, seeing both and everyone in this creation or every existence in this universe to be equal like other or to be in a state of musawat. So it is, as you said rightly, is oppression.
That's right.
A very simple, before you move to the respected guest of the show, A simple example of it is to check to look at the rights of man and woman in this universe. Mm-hmm. If we look at them equally, so it is sort of oppression to one side, definitely. And this was an old, old quarrel among the different schools of thought. And I think it's quite clear to see that justice is important rather than musawat.
That's right. Okay, Sayyid Mohsen. So, am I true when you are considering all the people the same, you are not observing justice towards them, especially when defined in terms of Islamic, we can't say terminology, Islamic rulings or something like that? Is it true?
That's right. And this is because in musawat or inequality, sometimes we are being unjust. Mm-hmm. We are being unjust.
You are acting unjustly.
Yes.
That's right.
You know, for example, if there is a guy who has a motorbike, for example, mm-hmm. I'm just giving an example, and he earns through that motorbike, he's doing a delivery, I don't know, pizza delivery or anything, and all savings that he has spent on this motorbike.
That's right.
And tomorrow, for example, if someone comes and burns his motorbike or, you know, harms it, he has taken his job from him. He cannot do anything else.
Yes.
Because that was the only source
of income. The means of earning, that's right.
Whereas there is a person who is rich who has, like, I don't know, 10 bikes. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we have these kind of people having 10 cars and bikes.
Collections
of the cars.
If someone
comes and harms one of his motorbikes, it's not equal to, you know, on equal basis, he says, like, I burned his bike and his bike, like the two people.
Oh.
If the hakim or if the, you know, the ruler comes and he says, I need to collect all the motorbikes, like, or I need to take one motorbike from every single family. For example.
That's right.
We need to use it for the government or for any use. If he's taking that bike from that person whose only source of income is that bike.
That's right.
He has taken everything from him. Mm-hmm. Whereas the one who has 10 bikes, if he takes one out from him, it's not going to harm him. So sometimes equality is basically being unjust.
But still, we cannot do oppression towards the rich guy. You know, say, bike out of the 10, because you have 10, so I have to take one
out. I just gave an example. For example, in some cases, for example, in war or anything, uh-huh. the government announces we need motorbikes, for example.
Okay.
And every single family should give a motorbike to the government because it needs it for a specific use.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, even, we need to justly work. The government should justly work.
Okay.
I just gave an example of motorbike. Maybe it's a tax. Maybe it's a money. Mm-hmm. It can be anything.
That's right.
So basically, in the inequality, obviously, there is an injustice. In Islam, why it is very important to talk about justice? It's because being a Shia, we believe in five principles. Number one is Tawheed, which is monotheism. That's Allah
right.
is one.
That's right.
The second is Adl. Allah is Adil. He is just. Now, how important is this, the term just and being justice or being just is important is that when we look at the Islamic, practices, even the statuses or the, you know, ranks in Islam, we always see justice to be one of the conditions.
That's right.
For example, for the Imamul Jama'ah, mm-hmm. the one who leads the prayer, he must be Adil. He must be a just person. Mujtahid, the one who gives fatwa, must be Adil. Katib, the one we have the verse in the chapter Baqarah, in which it is said when you give a loan to someone, get a person to write an agreement between you two, and that person should be Adil.
That's right.
Should write it according to the Adil or justice. Mm-hmm. Then if you look at the Hakim, the ruler of the Islamic State, he must be a just Adil. He must be just. Then you look at the judge himself. The judge must be Adil because when he gives the rulings or, you know, he makes a decision.
He issues a decision, that's right.
Or a statement or sentence.
Okay.
If he wants to sentence someone, it should be according to the justice. So justice has roots in every single part of life. Even in the family, it is also.
And there is a topology given by Rahbar that talks about, we can say, justice in different arenas, the religious adala, the personal one, the social one, the political one, yeah. the economic one. Okay, these are different topologies that are given by the supreme leader of Iran. I think we have to discuss them one by one.
Yes.
What we do not have time for this session. Let's get to them, inshallah, one by one, upcoming session of the program. For example, what does it mean by economic justice or social justice or political justice in terms of the Islamic concept? It was very kind of you, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Brother Ali Alavian.
Thank you
very much for your presence in this episode of the program, Viewpoints. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode. You can visit our website at parstoday.com/en. Call of Islam page, also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
With hundreds of fires raging, Toronto, New York, and Washington, D.C. have the world's unhealthiest air. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, Toronto and New York stood in first and second place on a list of the world's most polluted urban areas compiled by IQ Air recently, With wildfires burning in Canada, a choking smoke it has spread to major American metropolitan areas. More than 500 fires have been burning across several Canadian provinces for almost a month, spreading an orange-brown haze across eastern Canada and the U.S. Midwest and Northeast. The heavy concentration of particulate matter in the smoke has led public health officials to hand out masks and instruct people to remain indoors. More than 120 million Americans, a third of the population, were living under some kind of air quality alert, CNN reported. Toronto has recently had the worst air quality of any city in the world, according to a live index compiled by IQ Air, a Swiss air filter company. Toronto scored 154 on the company's index, making its air unhealthy for anyone to breathe. New York City and Washington, D.C. followed in second and third place with respective scores of 142 and 120. IQ Air considers an air quality of between 100 and 150 to be unhealthy for sensitive groups. Montreal, Chicago, and Detroit are also in the top 10 on IQ Air's list, alongside cities more commonly associated with air pollution, such as Beijing, Hanoi, and Calcutta. Earlier this week, Chicago and Detroit alternated between first and second place until prevailing winds pushed some of the smoke east. Residents of the Canadian province of Ontario and Ohio River Valley, which includes areas of New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Tennessee, have reported smelling burning plastic in the air. According to the Weather Network, this phenomenon occurs when smoke has lingered in the air for so long that the sun's radiation begins to break it down to release toxic benzene and formaldehyde. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has described the 2023 wildfire season as unprecedented and the worst since records began. While wildfire season usually peaks in mid-July, more emissions have already been released this year than any other year on record, according to a report published recently by Copernicus, the European Union's Earth Observation Program. Trudeau has blamed the fires on climate change, while his critics argue that poor forest management and a refusal by the authorities to engage in controlled burns are the true causes of the disastrous blazes. Also, Axios reported the smoke from unprecedented wildfires in Canada triggered poor air quality alerts over swathes of the U.S. again, with multiple cities reporting some of the worst air pollution levels of any major city around the world. While continuing to choke the Great Lakes region and the upper Midwest, the low-lying smoke also drifted southeast and began affecting Ohio Valley and mid-Atlantic cities. Canadian cities, too, were also greatly affected by the smoke, with the Toronto reporting the worst air quality for major cities around the world, according to Swiss air technology company IQ Air. The smoke from unprecedented Canadian wildfires, which have been exacerbated by human-caused climate change and global warming, has repeatedly choked North American cities this summer, and additional rounds of smoke may follow. Canada is experiencing its worst wildfire season on record, driven by extreme heat events and exacerbating drought conditions, according to data from the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center, CIFFC. Because of their size, locations, and behavior, the fires are not expected to be extinguished anytime soon, either by firefighters or a major shift in weather conditions until after summer ends, Axios' Andrew Friedman reports. Inhaling wildfire smoke when it's present in high concentrations at ground level can cause serious health complications and is especially dangerous for elderly populations and people with heart ailments or asthma. An Air Quality Action Day was declared for all of Northeast Illinois and Northwest Indiana, meaning fine particulate matter and other pollutants could build to unhealthy levels in the outdoor air. Air quality alerts across Upper Midwest are expected to remain in effect, according to the National Weather Service. Chicago had the second worst air quality for major cities around the world, with a 181 or a code red on the Air Quality Index, which is considered dangerous for sensitive groups. Detroit and Minneapolis followed with the second and third worst levels, respectively. Cleveland, which wasn't included in IQ Air's ranking system, had an AQI of 238, which is considered dangerous for all people. An Environmental Protection Agency monitor near Chippewa Lake, Ohio, was reporting an AQI of 309, which is a code maroon, the highest alert level of the index. The Cleveland skyline couldn't be seen from live cameras positioned just a few miles from a shore, while visibility at the city's international airport fell to 1.25 miles multiple times throughout the day. A slight haze and the smell of smoke were present in Washington, D.C., where air quality fell to levels unhealthy to sensitive groups of people. The smoke caused a thick haze in downtown Chicago, reducing visibility at Chicago O'Hare International Airport to 1.25 miles for several hours on several days. Winds have also carried the smoke across the Atlantic Ocean over to Europe, where the sun was partially shrouded in areas of Portugal and Spain. 476 wildfires were burning across Canada, including 234 out-of-control fires. CIFFC reported that 2,957 fires this season have burnt 19.3 million acres, 7.8 million hectares in Canada, which is an area equivalent to all of Michigan's forest land. The reported total number of fires jumped to 2,988, while the burnt acreage went up to around 19.8 million acres, 8 million hectares.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.